All right, hey, here we go. It's Bromo here, my first podcast of May. It is May 7th. This is my 34th podcast already. There is a way out. I am an alcoholic. My sobriety date is 2-17-09. I am not an expert. I tell everybody that. I want everybody to know that. I don't have any kind of certificate. I pride myself on just years of experience, I guess you would say. I've been around like for quite a while as far as hearing other stories, and I know you've heard my story over and over again. My strength in this podcast is by far those that I put on and who want to share, such as this gentleman I'm going to introduce in a second. A lot of them I've known for years. Some of them I've just met, like this gentleman you're going to hear in just a few seconds. This is what it's all about, is our program of words of hope and strength and encouragement of others. And this gentleman is Michael Rosario. Mike, I'm just going to call you Mike. Are you okay with that?
Yes.
Mike, you can hear me okay, right?
Yes, sir.
Mike, welcome to this podcast, There Is a Way Out. Mike, what is your sobriety date, if you want to mention that?
I'm 13 months.
Excellent. And you are 45 years old. You live out here in Bismarck, correct?
Correct.
And are you from Bismarck?
No. I'm from Illinois and Wisconsin border.
Okay. We're going to get into your share in just a second, but what was your choice? Was it alcohol? Was it a combination of both?
Well, a combination of both. I've been a recovering alcoholic since 2013. I was a meth addict for 22 years.
Okay.
So, yeah.
One thing you're going to know, and we're a mutual friends of Bill. Bill is the one that introduced me to you today through Facebook. And he told me, you got to hear this guy's story. I looked at some of the pictures on your Facebook page, and I said, yep, I want to have this guy on. And Bill told me a little bit about yourself. How do you know Bill? Bill was on my last podcast, I believe, for all those who heard. How do you know Bill? Just through our recovery?
I met Bill through a mutual friend of ours about a year ago or whatnot. And me and Bill, we have the same passion with the youth.
Yep.
I mentioned my ministry back then when I first met him, and he's shooting his idea off of me, and we've just been staying in contact throughout his whole process. And so it's like, we just support each other, and we have to do the best we can to help the youth.
And that's what this is all about.
A good friend of mine.
Support. Yeah, that's what this is all about, and you know that. So let's hear your story. Well, about what age do you think you began to become a little bit more interested in drinking or drugs?
I've been around drinking and drugs my whole life. My dad was a severe alcoholic, and then like my family in Chicago, they were alcoholics and used and sold drugs. So I just grew up in that lifestyle. My dad tried his best to keep me out of it, especially the gang life, because my family's all active gang members. So it's just, I was always around it. I tried marijuana the first time when I was 8. I've always took sips or whatever of my dad's alcohol ever since I could probably, like, far as I can remember, just being in pull-ups.
Yeah.
But it never kicked off. I started drinking in middle school with the kids. We'd get drunk before class every morning. I was still smoking weed. I was dealing drugs in middle school.
Right.
And I never did any narcotics until I got out of my first prison bit. So I went to prison at the age of 16, waived into adult court. So I got sentenced to 5.5 years in a supermax.
Let's put a break on that right there, because first of all, I think I've told you off the air, and I'm going to tell you now, so people who have heard my podcast either get frustrated and they know. I'm going to interrupt sometimes.
Yeah.
I don't do that to be rude. I interrupt because I want to focus on something just for a little bit. Do you have any brothers and sisters?
Yeah, I got seven brothers and sisters.
And you guys all live together?
No. We grew up in broken homes.
Okay.
So my older brother and my little brother, who are the third youngest, we grew up pretty much together, and the rest are from different marriages.
Okay, I'm going to set the stage real quick. Me growing up, San Diego, middle-class neighborhood, cul-de-sac, playing hide-and-go-seek, playing street football, tag football, until your mom comes out and yells independently, "Bromo, time for dinner." And then somebody else's mom comes out, "Steve." And then we all depart and go have dinner, and then we see each other the next day. I never, ever saw a gang. You said you grew up in a gang area, like a gang environment. Is that right?
Yeah, part of it is until my dad got us out of there. Like where I grew up was my family were all maniacs. They're like, I don't know if I'm allowed to tell you that, but like they're all just a Hispanic gang in Chicago.
Okay.
So my dad, like, that's instantly seen what was going on with my uncles and everybody else and my grandma and all them. That's what I wanted to be. You know, so my dad got us out of there, but that never left me. So we moved to Wisconsin on the border of Illinois, and I just, like, we'd go there on the weekends, but that gang lifestyle stood with me. So that's what I did.
Tell us what will you please tell us what that's like, to be as honest as possible? Is it scary? Is it part of a clan that you feel that you're obligated with everybody else in this gang? Do you feel tough being in it? I don't know that feeling. Can you describe it?
Well, for me, it was family.
Yeah.
And my whole family was doing it.
Yeah.
So it's something that I was just like we're born and raised into, and that lifestyle. So it was like the family business. Actually, it was, to be real with you, you know what I mean? So,
yeah.
But my dad was never active because my dad was taken away when he was 8 from Chicago and raised in the Boys Ranch. But soon as, like, I got around my uncles and all that, I just knew that's what I wanted to do.
Right.
My cousins and all of them. So, like, I have a lot of PTSD from it, from the things that I've seen, and from people trying to kill me my whole life. So it's whether it be from opposite gangs or cops trying to do it or whatnot. So just, I was always always watching my surroundings. Some people may call it paranoia, but it was survival.
Does it still run in your dreams? Mm-hmm. Does it still run in your dreams?
No. It's like, man. God freed me of all that.
Right.
And it's like the things that I've been through is what made me who I am today and gave me the platform to be able to reach out to these youth and others to be like, hey, I've been down this path. I know your pain.
Yeah.
And man, I'm here to speak life into you instead of death.
I love it. And listen, that's what we're going to do. But from your gang, from when you were in the gang and you broke away from that, how were you able to do that? And then tell us more about how your drinking and drug using became more of a problem.
So, like, as far as the gang, it's like, you don't break away, man. So, like, with my family, like, before my uncle passed, he was the jefe. So, it's like, they knew that what I was doing, trying to better my life and everything. So, they respected that. Plus, like I told you, man, I've done my, as people may say, your stripes, you get your stripes. I've done my work.
Yeah.
Like I said, I went to prison at the age of 16 for gang violence.
Wow.
So my parents, not my parents, but I grew up pretty much on my own because after I got in trouble when I was 15, I was out in the streets. That's what I did full time.
Okay.
I pretty much, the respect and the work that I put in led me to where I had calls. I was, you know what I mean? I was holding things down.
I do.
But a lot of the older guys, they just had mad respect for me because of what I was about. So it's like, I never really had no problems. None of them ever came after me other than, you know, when they, like, go renegade and started going against each other And that wasn't, that was just because of greed or whatever.
Yeah.
But other than that, I've had nothing but utmost respect from them.
But you're having no problems using drugs and drinking at that age, right?
I wasn't having problems. It's like, that's what we did. You know what I mean? We smoked a lot of weed, but I never got into narcotics until I got out of prison. But I've always was selling them.
Yeah.
You know? But that's when, 2001 is when I moved up here, and I was introduced to meth. And from there, bro, it's just like I was caught.
Were you hooked right away?
To be honest with you, I'm gonna say yeah, because it's like it's just I'm ADHD, right? So that stuff can like help control my ADHD, but then. After that, dude, it's just, I loved being up. You know, I loved just, yeah, dude, I'm going to say I was hooked.
What would you say, Mike, as far as how many days up you would be with no problem? A couple days, no problem?
Oh, easy, dude. There's been times I've been up for 30 days.
Wow. And here's the thing. Here's the thing, Mike.
Yeah.
And I'm trying to nail this down and try to understand. And I apologize to the audience when I sound like such a dope. I don't understand. I understand. Here's the thing. I understand going from alcohol and from pot, even though I never did pot. But I understand going from alcohol to a brand new plateau level of feeling just invincible and high. And that's what meth does to you, right?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, meth. Yeah. It does all types of things, man. It's like my mind was I'm strong-minded. So, like, after a few days, people would go into sleep deprivation. And like all the hallucinations and stuff.
Yeah.
But it's like, I know what's real and what's not, but a lot of things too is that I'm spiritually in tune. So I'm used to the spiritual realm. So a lot of things that I would see and witness,
yeah.
I was already used to it. So I took authority over it and didn't let it drive me crazy.
Is it easy to find meth? Was it easy to find meth back then? Is it easy? I mean, I have no clue.
Oh, man, it's so easy, dude.
Is it really?
It's like, yeah, so this is how easy it is. I went from, like, never even hearing about it or seeing about it. Like, I heard about it once when I was in prison when I was 16, right?
Yeah.
From some white guy I was in prison with, and he drew me a lab and everything. But I was like, I thought he was crazy because I've been around drugs my whole life. And I'm like, I've never heard of this stuff, so I wrote him off. But when I got up in North Dakota, and then I got introduced to it, and then it was... so easy for someone like me that knows how to adapt and knows that the drug lifestyle,
yeah.
It was easy for me just to get plugged in, then go to Mexico and come back. And it just like, it's so easy that it's scary to be honest with you.
Yeah.
Cause no matter where I go, even to this day, no matter where I go, it's easy for me to get a hold of. And the devil puts it at such a good price that, it's hard to resist. But I already know the outcome, and that's, you know, I admittedly know that I've destroyed a lot of lives, you know, and it's like, I'm never going to do that to another family, you know, and it's like, I want to help heal addiction and broken homes, and so staying sober is a big part of that.
Let's talk about how bad you really got with yourself, with the meth. There had to be a breaking point where you said to yourself, or maybe it was you were arrested again. I don't know. It's the first time I've talked to you. First time I'm hearing your story. Let's talk about how bad it really got to the point where you said to yourself, I got to stop, or you tell us.
Right. Well, it's been, like I said, it's been a 22-year path. So it's like, I love the fast life. So that's one of my addictions is the fast life,
yep.
Whether how I'm going to get caught or if somebody's going to shoot me or what. But just that adrenaline is something that drove me. So I've been in many bad situations to where it should have been the card to have been like, hey, I need to stop, but I wouldn't. I really started slowing down. In 2017, I got... set up on a high profile case with a bomb in my backpack, and it was 64 plus grams of dope. So I sat 20 months in county. I was facing life, here in Bismarck.
Wait a minute. And you're facing life behind the bars.
Yes.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. Yep.
What kind of thought process was in your head then? Were you just asking for it? Were you saying to yourself, if I ever get out of it? I mean, what goes on in your head if somebody tells you, hey, you may never get out behind the walls? I have no clue.
So, like, okay, part of me is like, I got a 17-year-old daughter. She just turned 17 in October. Like, that's what, right there, that part of not possibly going to be able to take her to prom and be in her life, that killed me, right? Because I knew that I was making the wrong decisions, no matter what pain I was going through my divorce and custody battle, that was ultimately also keeping me away from her. But as far as the rest, it's like my mind was so set that I'm institutionalized from being locked up in prison at such a young age for so long that I adapt, you know? So when I'm in there, I just cut off the community. I don't call nobody. You know what I mean? I don't get no visits. The only person I wrote would be my daughter, even though I know that I wasn't never going to get a letter back, but I just wanted to let her know that, hey, your dad's okay. And I take responsibility for my decisions. But otherwise, when I was in there, when I was locked up too, my mentality was I'd set up shop in there.
Yeah.
So even though it wasn't drugs, I was still doing things to survive, to make money and do what I had to do. So I had everything that everybody else had the opportunity to have, as far as TVs, watches, whatever I needed, whatever hustle I needed to do. I just took that from the streets and put it in there.
You adapted.
You know? Oh yeah. It's like, yeah. So it's like, to be real with you, this may sound really dumb, but It was home away from home. I get locked up. All the homies are in there.
No, right? I've heard that. I've seen that. I just don't know how real that is until I'm listening to you now. You know?
Oh yeah, it's real. So all the boys are in there, and it's like even Kathy didn't even get along with on the street. As soon as you get in there, it's a different story. Like North Dakota's prison system is so different compared to what I'm used to. But so everybody they pretty much come together. You know?
Yeah.
So it's just, I was in a comfort zone, you know, but I knew that this, because I ended up getting sentenced to 6 years in prison up here for that case in 2017. I knew that when I was in prison up here that, all right, things need to change. And that's when I really just started, God put this on my heart about my youth ministry, the boxing ministry.
Yeah.
And I just started reaching out to Dr. Penny. She was the education director for the prison system, and she introduced me to an entrepreneurial professor from University of Mary, and they believed in me. Even some of the guards in there, which is totally awesome, right? But I told them, this is my vision. I feel this is what God's called me to do. And these guys believed in me, and they helped me get to the people that I needed to get to in order to start this nonprofit. So it's like, I've never had that before, the support like that, especially from guards or any guards in a prison system. So it just gave me more hope. And it just made me wanted to fight for this even more.
Well, we're going to talk more about that in just a second. But the darkest of your days, was there any hope in your mind? Did you think that, did you believe a faint feeling in your heart that things could change? Or were you just set with your homies, like you said? You're set in a comfortable environment, like you said, where you go back and people surround you, a lot of people that you knew, and you've been there, and you've adapted. Like you said, you adapted. But was there ever a hope in your heart for a better life, to be with your daughter?
Yeah, so I've always knew that after I died twice, I knew that I had a special purpose.
Wait a minute. Hold on a second. You died twice from drugs?
Well, one was from drugs. The other one was from suicide.
Okay. Well, that's a rough deal. That was... Okay. And here's where we tap lightly a little bit. This is, how old were you on the second part that you said you wanted? Was this, you wanted to take your own life?
This is in 2015.
This was a decision that you said to yourself, I don't want to be here anymore. There's nothing more I can do.
Yeah. I made that decision. Yep.
Can you elaborate just a little bit how things did not, thank God that things did not end up the way you wanted to back then? What happened?
Well, At this point in time, I was going through my divorce and custody battle. I was married for 12 years.
Yeah.
And it's like, even though I was a functioning addict, so I was an employee company rep of a construction outfit up here. I was also doing, like, my amateur boxing, and, you know, I'd stick golden gloves and all that. So a lot of people didn't know my double side. But with my divorce kicking off and custody battle, I was forced out of my career, out of everything. And I was a respectable community member. Nobody knew that I was still trafficking drugs and using. So once I was forced out of state, due to, like, my ex-wife had, like, calling in a false domestic with a firearm or whatnot, it just being away from my daughter because she was everything to me, you know? So, I just got to the point where I was back in Wisconsin, caught a gun case because I was trying to sell my firearm to come back to be where my daughter's at. And so I was facing time on, and just the thought of me getting convicted for this gun case, I could ultimately lose the custody battle for my daughter when originally I had a good shot at it.
And you would never see her, in your mind, you would never see her again, or you wouldn't.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
Okay.
So, like, her mom, my ex is like, She did whatever she could to keep her out of my life.
Yeah.
And it's like, I couldn't handle that. And they knew that by doing that, that would ultimately destroy me. And I couldn't handle it. I didn't know how to handle it. You know, cause this young lady was my pride and joy. She's why I went to work every day and sacrificed a lot of hours for work to make sure she never needed anything. And I just loved her. Like, I've always wanted it. Like, I always wanted to be loved. So,
well, yeah, you're the father for one thing, and you know.
Yeah.
So what happened? You couldn't. You decided
to handle it, man.
Yeah. So what happened?
So, well, I went in the bathroom of my apartment, and hung myself in the bathroom. So it's like, I set it to where I knew there's no way out of it. There's this girl that. She was like my sister before I went to prison when I was 16, and we watched her hang herself on a porch. And so I used the same method she did. And I was out. Next thing you know, I woke up just freezing cold. I had chills so bad that I knew what it was. I knew it was death. And I'm looking like, how the heck did I get out? How did I fall out of this? You know, the noose is still there, but I'm out of it. And that's when I really started, like, having that spiritual connection. Then I started hearing God speak to me. And it's just like, from then I was like, man, I got to try doing something different.
So wait a minute. You learned a technique that you saw from a young lady. Did she actually kill herself?
Yeah, she's been dead since 1995.
You saw that. Did you see that, or you just saw the technique?
No, we saw it. She did it on the porch while we were at a party.
Oh, my
God.
And
she was like, my sister, dude. It's like,
God.
So I carried that with me for years, man, and it just, like, I felt like it was my fault. Like, there's something I could have done different to protect her, and
right.
So the enemy used that to help also beat me in my life.
Have you talked all of this, and then we'll go right back to where we are at right now?
Yes.
But all of this, have you talked to a professional, a therapist, someone like this, and have told them or this a person the same thing you just told me?
Well, like, when I first, like, when my divorce and stuff kicked off, I told, like, my dad, I went back to my dad's house in Wisconsin. That's, like, the first time I've been there since I was 15.
Yeah.
And I told him and my stepmom, like, hey, man, I'm struggling. And they're like, well, you should go try talking to somebody. So I went. I went to see a psychiatrist, and I got kicked out. He kicked me out and told me he can't help me and sent me to the ER.
What was the reasoning? Why did this person say he couldn't help you, he or she?
I have no idea. I think that I was surprised, dude, because he's like, well, why are you here? And I was like, hey, dude, I need some healing. Oh. You know what I mean? I was like, this stuff's happened in my life. My real mom took off when I was 3.
Yeah.
I told him about another death, like, with my friend that I'm on an interview. So, and then also that another death that my friend had his head blown off on at a party that we're at.
Yeah.
And it's like, and he just told me, he stopped me right there, dude. Because I told him I need to get healing. I need to figure out how to get through all this. And he just stopped me and was like, hey, you got to go. I can't help you. You need to go to the ER. So I never reached out to anybody else again about it.
I'm just blown away by hearing it. And I apologize that a lot of times I'm not professional. Like I said, this podcast is never.
Yeah.
And I don't, like I said, I don't have any kind of paperwork or I'm not certified. But I can tell you this. I can only imagine what that person was going through when you laid all that in front of, it was a he, right?
Yeah.
And so this person said, wow, this is a lot for one person to even try to comprehend. And there's just, I don't think it's possible for anyone to comprehend what you've been through. There is, right. And you and I both have our higher power, and yes, God knows what you've been through.
Yes.
And when you were given another chance after, thank goodness, the rope thing didn't work, how did you start your climb back in? How did you start your climb away from drugs and drinking? Did you all of a sudden say to yourself, I need help? Did you go to a program?
No. So, like, I've known the program, cognitive thinking, AODA, all that. I've known that ever since I was 16 when I was in the Supermax prison, because that's part of the conditions that they made me do before I could even be possible for eligible for parole. So I did all that. I took all that. I was like a sponge. I soaked all that information in, and I kept it always with me.
Tell us what you were thinking when you were going through that. Was that pretty amazing information they were giving you? I mean, they really wanted to make an impact, didn't they?
Well, to be real with you,
yeah.
It's like, I was like, this is bullcrap, man.
Yeah.
Because it's like, you know, they had me going through all that stuff when I was in there for substantial battery and criminal gang crimes.
Right.
And I was like, I'm not in here for drugs, so why are you guys making me do all this? But I retained all the information, not knowing that later on in life, I'm going to have to use that knowledge, and it's going to help me become a better person.
Those are tools, as you know, term now.
Amen.
Those are tools.
Yep.
So you got out of prison. Did you go? Yep. Did you go to a recovery home? Did you go someplace to heal, or tell us how you were able to in the first, you know, months? How were you able to stay sober and combat the voices in your head?
Well, I was kicked back out to the streets. So
yeah,
I was like at that point in time, I didn't use narcotics. I just the choice that I sold was marijuana and crack.
Okay,
so. I got kicked back out in the streets, and what do you do when you're 21 years old, been locked up the whole time, you ain't got no place to go? So I went back to doing what I knew best, and that was dealing drugs and gangbanging.
Okay.
So after I was under investigation for two homicides, that's when I moved up to North Dakota. So it's like that pushed me out of back home, and because I wasn't involved in it, I was there at the scene a couple hours prior to it, but it's just right then I knew that lifestyle I had to get away from. So that's when I came to North Dakota, and that's when I got into addiction with meth.
So something told you, hey, this isn't down the road. This is probably going to take my life away. I mean, that was the only direction it was going, don't you think?
Yeah, well, yeah. Our life expectancy for the lifestyle that I was living wasn't past 18.
Jeez.
I wasn't thinking about being 22, 25. I didn't even care. I was like, I'm going to be dead before then anyways. So I'm going to do what I need to do. And it's like when I was 21, when I came out to North Dakota, it's like I wasn't going to let the state of Wisconsin lock me up for life for two murders that I didn't commit.
Right.
So that's why I left. And then that's when I came up here and actually worked my first job in construction, and that's the career I still do now. But it's like, I knew that I had to make some changes, and here was the place to start doing it because they accepted me with open arms. But that's when I fell into meth addiction too.
Well, do you want to tell everybody what it was like when you finally surrendered? When you finally surrendered 100%?
I surrendered 100% 13 months ago. It's like, I've been, to be real with you, like, I've been set free of it all. So all the hurt and pain that from everything that's happened in my life, I gave it to God, man. I've been free to that. I have so much joy and peace in my soul that I know that for sure that God broke the bondage of addiction also. So it's like I never think about it, and I'm out here trying to help others get out of something that controlled my life for so long. And what better way than be that light to everybody that I used to sell and use drugs with? So when they see me, and they're like, bro, what'd you do different? What's going on? And you got this light, you got this peace about you and everything. And I'm like, bro, it's God, and this is how I did. I surrendered, and I trust him fully in everything I do now. I serve him, not myself.
I love that, what you just said. Not myself. Here's the thing I want to tell you real quick.
Yeah.
I base these podcasts on higher power from our program because not everybody has a belief that we do, okay, that you and I do, okay? But a higher power is necessary for anybody who's trying to conquer addiction. A higher power, and I hate this when they told me this in my recovery home because I used to think they were making light of it, but now I know they're not. But they would say to me, a higher power, like for some people it could be a doorknob, as silly as that. A higher power could be another kind of religion for somebody. A higher power is someone that takes you through these steps that you believe in, that you need, because in my mind, it's almost impossible to just flat out one day after 20 years of drinking and using and whatever, just say, I'm done, I've quit, I'm not ever going to do this again, and then they don't go to meetings or nothing. And those people are rare. Wouldn't you agree?
Yes.
That's how violent these drugs and alcohol is. That's how strong they are.
Yeah.
So when you say your higher power, buddy, when you say your higher power, it's mine too, God. And God,
yeah, for sure.
There's a reason why there's several times in the steps why it's mentioned, admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. That's step five. But in your way of recovering, do you remember what it's like when the obsession was finally gone from you? It's one of my favorite things to talk about to people. You remember what it was like when you finally woke up one day and you said to yourself, you know what? I haven't thought about drinking or drugs, and I don't need to do that.
Yeah, so it's crazy how it worked for me. This is 13 months ago, right? So, because I was sober 10 months prior to that before I relapsed, but 13 months ago, I was sitting in the hotel room, you know, and I just gotten 5 pounds of meth.
Yeah.
And God just said, "Hey," he's like, "grow up and step into what I called you to do." And as soon as I heard him say that, I giggled, right? I giggled because I knew that he was right, and that I have such a great calling that I need to quit being selfish and do what I'm called to do.
So What were the words that you giggled for? What were the words that you laughed at?
He said, "Grow up and step into what I called you to do."
Oh, I love that. Yep.
Yep. And from right then, I gave the meth back, and they're looking at me all crazy, like, "What the heck?" You know what I mean? I'm like, "Hey, dude. I'm done with this. I'm done not only hurting myself, but I'm done being that poison to everybody that I say I love. I'm not loving them if I'm giving this stuff to them." So I was like, I'm just going to surrender to God and just fully trust them, because that's my thing, trust. You know, I've been hurt by so many people in my life that said they love me.
Yeah.
So I didn't want to trust nobody. But once I fully trust God and what he has called me to do, I've been set free from everything.
Let's rewind just a tad. And I promise you we won't keep doing the rewinding part, but I need to rewind you and ask you one question.
Yeah.
You had said you were sober for a while until you relapsed one last time, right?
Yeah.
You remember how easy that was? How, and I say this for other people that have relapsed, including myself, you remember how you tell yourself, no way am I going to do that or drink or use it again. And you remember how easy it is to relapse? It's a part of the process, isn't it? It happens so fast, doesn't it?
Well, yeah, and it's like it doesn't have to be. Like, see, like I wasn't trusting God. I didn't fully surrender to trusting him.
Yeah.
So, like, I was doing good. And then, you know, the devil's so swift, so he used the incident of two winters ago when we had that big storm.
Yeah.
Okay, well, I went to go help a friend of mine who's going through heroin withdrawals, and I know that people close to me die from that. So I left in the blizzard to go help him, and I got I got stuck in the parking lot of the apartment building north of North Washington.
Right.
And I called him and was like, hey, bro, can you come help dig me out? Whatever. Yep. He's like, yeah. So he came out and ended up dying in the snowbank.
Are you? Oh, so, my God. Jesus.
Yeah. So the ambulance and the police, they came and got his body out of the snowbank during the blizzard and left me and my friend out there to freeze all night to die.
Yeah.
So the devil he knew what he was doing. So I was like, man, I was calling 911. Yeah. We were trying to get help, and we were just stuck out there in the blizzard and almost froze to death. And right there was my breaking point, right? So I was like, all right, screw this. And that's when I relapsed.
Yeah.
And now I was like, I totally trust God in anything and everything. And like I said, I serve him and not myself.
Yeah, I love it. So 13 months it's been that you've been sober.
Yes.
And in that span, now you told me that you're a boxer. Did you box when you were younger? Like in competition?
I used to represent North Dakota in the early 2000s, Region 3. So I'd represent us I've won state Golden Gloves a couple times. We'd go up to the upper Midwest at the Grand Hinckley Casino.
Mm-hmm.
So I had an opportunity to have a pro contract, but I turned that all down, because at the time it's like I was married and I wouldn't have been faithful to my wife because I was already getting notoriety and some semi-fame for every place I'd go to fight at. And, and it's like, so I stepped back. It's been, since 2006 was my last fight. And so with my ministry that I started 3 years ago, God put that on my heart. He's like, hey, man, use the gift that I gave you.
Right.
And use that to reach out to the youth and plant that seed of Jesus. Teach them about me through the gift that I have given you. So I have that ministry. And then now God has blessed me to the September 21st and 22nd. I'm going to New Jersey to fight in the Masters tournament to bring my ministry nationwide.
Nationwide now.
Yeah, I get the opportunity to fight underneath my ministry at the Masters Tournament in New Jersey, September 21st and 22nd. I'm on the roster now.
So yep. Can anybody Google you? Can anybody go on and check out some information on you and read about what you're doing? That's what I'd like to know.
Yeah. Yeah, so I got a business website. It's called Nevaeh's Boxing Ministry. And Nevaeh's is spelled N-E-V-A-A-H-S. Mm-hmm. It's uniquely spelled. But got the business site on there. I got photos of what I'm doing with our youth in the community, and it's just like all positivity, all positive vibes to prevent destructive decisions. And like I said, the big picture is that plant that seed of Jesus, right? Because he's the only one that set me free, and that's I know that's one of my callings is that I got to speak truth to try being that light to lead people to him.
What ages are we talking about?
I work with ages four to 17 free, Monday, Wednesday, and Fridays from 5 to 6:30 at New Song Church downstairs.
And how many of these little guys are you working with?
Right now, on a good day, I probably got 30.
Are you having parents come up to you and thank you?
Oh yeah, that's where I get a lot of joy from, because a lot of these kids are from broken homes like I was. Either one of the parents are gone or one of the parents are in addiction going through the same stuff that I went through. And I'm able to sit there and speak life into these kids. Like, hey, I've been there, dude. And give them a different way to look at life. And then I mentor them, I'm like, hey, I'm their big brother. And this is how you should be acting like a gentleman. You should be opening doors for ladies and have respect and everything else. And their parents are just like, they're so grateful that this program exists. And it's like, man, I'm so glad that I stopped being selfish and decided to do what God created me to do.
Was this your idea for this program?
It was God's. I take no credit.
No, of course not, but he inspired you, right?
Oh, he gave, man. So he gave me the name and how to spell it, because Nevaeh's got four meanings. So it's like it represents like the capital H, and the second A represents my daughter Helena. Then Nevaeh's is my brother Mark's daughter, and then Nevaeh's is uniquely heaven spelled backwards. And then I put an S at the end because that represents all of our youth. Not just my daughter, my brother's daughter in heaven backwards, but it's God's purpose for me to reach the youth.
Let me ask you a quick question, and you can answer it if you want. And I'm pretty sure you will, because you've been really open with me, and I appreciate that.
Yeah, for sure.
Let's say somebody pulls you aside and you're in a comfortable spot with some people around your age, and somebody says to you, quote, "Hey, you know, you used to get high before. I've got a little bit of here, there. You know, you actually owe yourself a little bit of relaxation. Would you like to join me?" Tell us about the tools. Tell us about the tools that you've learned to combat that, because that's not an easy thing when you're even in. I don't care if you're 16 years sober. You know, I still have dreams of an ice cold beer here and there. And I'm not saying that I'm perfect, but, you know, what are your tools that you use to combat that? And I'm sure that's happened before you, right?
Well, I've had similar things, but it's like a lot of people just, well, some of the connections that I know would just be like, "Here, we'll just throw you a whole bunch of pounds, you know what I mean, real cheap. Here you go if you want him." And I'm just, or like a lot of people that I mentor to, even in these recovery rooms, like some of them still be using, and like, "Hey, can you hook it up?" And I'm like, "Nah, dude." I tell them straight up, I'm like, "You know what? I was like, if I really love you like I say I love you, then I'm not gonna give you this poison no more."
Yeah,
you know what I mean. I just tell them that straight up. I was like, "You deserve way better life." And then I mentor them. I'm like, "Hey, if you need counseling, if you need a sponsor, I sponsor men now." And it's like, I'll do what I can to help get you right. And so I just, one thing that keeps me strong is that my faith in God, that's key. And then second is like, I'd rather have one boring day of boredom than to go through any of that crap that I went through before.
Oh, I hear you on that one. Boy, I can relate to that. Yep.
Yeah, because it was all hell. And to see the fruits that I bear with how many people I'm helping, from the youth to other addicts, and then just that smile on my daughter's face. Like, I was able to go to her grand march for prom a couple weekends ago, and that was priceless.
Hey, Mike, let's talk about that real quick. Yeah. I want to know how glorious it was, like another gift. This is the gifts of sobriety, I call it, and there are different ways of calling it. I want to know how glorious it was to see the look in your daughter's eyes as she's now looking at a man who's changing lives right and left. That must have been a heck of a feeling. I mean, it still must be every single time you see her, right?
Yeah, it's to be real with you, dude, it makes me cry all the time, because that's how much, like right now I'm choking up. So
that's okay. That's okay.
Yeah. My daughter, she's such a blessing, and to see that joy and that she's got her dad back is priceless, man. I would never change it for anything in the world, and I don't look at my past no more as like, "Oh, I wish I could have done things different." And it's like, nah, dude, I'm doing things now, and we're going to make the best of this until God calls me home. You know, and so she got baptized. She got baptized with me, and her faith in God is so strong too, just by her watching.
Yeah.
Me.
How old is she, Mike?
Now.
Mike, how old is she?
She's 17. She's 17.
Has she ever heard you share, like full on share?
Oh, she knows. Like, she knows my life, like my old lifestyle. She's never seen it because I never used it in front of her. But she knows about my gang history. She's met some of her family in Chicago that when I took her up there when she was younger. So she knows the hell I've been through, and just to see the joy on my face and me actually like helping others I set a good example for her. So that's what she does now, and it's just like, man, I broke the generational curse. She's never gonna have to worry about addiction because I broke it through Christ, and it's one of the best feelings ever, man.
Will you do me a favor, Mike? When this segment is done, and it's already produced and it's out, will you send it to her and have her listen?
Oh yeah, for sure. She's probably listening right now because I talked to her right before we right before you called.
Well, go for all of us.
I'll definitely send it to her.
For all of the people who listen to my podcast, and I'm so appreciative. I can't even tell you how much in my life this means to me, and I hope everybody that's on my group page, there is a way out. By the way, it's free to go on and join, but this is not live. This is being recorded right now, but in about an hour and a half, it'll be all set for everybody to listen to. I hope that she knows. Well, I know she knows. And see, these are all gifts that are given to us for a second. And for you, this is a third chance in life. You said earlier this episode. And you have to understand, and you know, by when you get together with these youths, some of them, a lot of them in broken homes that come and they see you as a mentor. They see you as an example of a man that's full of the right things in life. He's taken the right path. And you're showing them how to box. You're showing them how to be in sports. You're also showing them what it's like to be clean and sober and stay away from all this garbage that's out there. Didn't you say all of this stuff is so easy to get nowadays? It's so accessible?
Yeah, it's easy, man. It's everywhere.
Isn't that awful? It's just terrible.
Yeah, man. So it's like I'm a big advocate in keeping these kids away from drugs and this lifestyle. So wherever chance I'm able to share my message or just even speak, like right now I'm working on my pastoral license to be a youth pastor, and I'm using that platform too just to reach kids even in church, because broken kids are in church also.
Yeah.
You know, they just need somebody they could trust that's not going to hurt them and that's going to guide them in the right direction. And
well, you know what they need? They need real love is what it is. It's real love. And ironically, earlier in your life, you said when you went back to prison, you saw... I sound really stupid. Sorry if I say... I sound really stupid when I say homie, because I'm about as white as Wonder Bread is. but that doesn't matter what color your skin is. When you said earlier, when you go to prison, you saw your homies. You said it was like coming back to a second home. Didn't you say that? Correct?
Oh, it is.
So, you know
I'm there with everybody.
Yeah, so you know what that feeling is like with love, right? Love as far as understanding and people knowing who you are and what kind of guy you are. But that was your other life. Your life now.
Yeah, and that wasn't love, though.
No. No, that was just not even companionship. It was just familiar. Just a familiar where you're adjusting. Remember, what did you say earlier? You adapt. You're a bunch of adaptees all around you that are adapting to that kind of lifestyle. That you're right. That wasn't real love. Your kind of lifestyle now is actually, if and you know this in your heart, you're actually teaching real love.
Yeah.
And what a great gift that is, by teaching real love to these kids and their parents, and a correct way to lead your life without alcohol and drugs. There is a way out where you can change your life completely, like you said, with our higher power. Can I ask you a personal question?
Sure.
I know that you and I believe in our God, our higher power. When you were going through really bad times, did you almost... not turn your back on God, but did you feel embarrassed, or did you ever try to talk to him, or were you just too, when you said to yourself, look, I don't deserve, did you ever say to yourself, you never deserved God?
No, man. So what's crazy, right, is like, I was still preaching the gospel when I was in the trap houses, and I was selling drugs and using. We'd have Bible studies, man. People would come to my place, we'd get high, and then we'd sit there and I'd have a Bible study. So I was still speaking life into everybody that came across me. It's just that with me using and selling drugs, I wasn't walking in the spirit with my authority like I was supposed to be doing. So I've always spoke life about God, man, because he's amazing. You know, it's just whether we're going to do his will or our own.
Mike, go ahead and repeat the address or the link where people can come and go on Google and see you.
Okay. It's on Facebook groups, Nevaeh Boxing Ministry. It's Nevaehs Boxing Ministry. We're at 3200 North 11th Street, downstairs at New Song Church. The email is NevaehsBoxingMinistry@gmail.com, or you can contact me on phone at 701-946-4004.
Do me a favor, Mike, in the next couple of weeks or so, in your progress of your boxing and the people that you work with and the kids that you work with, give me an update now and then on my page so I can share it, so there is a way out so I can let all of our members see that, okay?
Yeah, definitely.
You okay with that?
Yes, sir.
Is there anything else you want to say about... Is there anything else you want to say about the evils of doing what people do and the people that feel that they're stuck? Do you want to tell anybody anything that some people say there is no way out? I'm just going to run this life that I have right now, and I don't know where it's going to take me, but it can't be any good. And, you know, if my life ends because I'm stuck in this, what do you want to say to those people or to anybody who feels like they may have a problem?
So it's like all them thoughts are lies from the enemy. God is so amazing that he loves us all and he has set us free. We just have to surrender to him. It's one step at a time, one day at a time. And we're searching for progress, not perfection. So there's going to be trials that are going to come. We're going to be tested. If we fall 7 times, we get up 8. We just continue to put our faith in God and surround yourself with like-minded people, you know. And, yeah, and things will get a lot easier. I mean, yeah, there's difficulties in life, but we learn how to handle them once we trust God and start doing the way he wants us to handle things.
Mike, I sure appreciate your time. I apologize sometimes if I'm so naive with some of my dumb questions about drugs and things like that on the dark side. I just I have to be honest, you know. I don't know anything about gangs and things like that, but you definitely painted a picture that's really grim and honest.
Yeah, honesty is key.
Mike, hang on real quick, okay? I'm going to wrap things up. Well, there you go. There you go. That's what happens when I have another guest come on and share their life. Mike's purpose is to now pass on what he's learned, what his hope is for others who feel that there is no way out, because there really is. With your higher power, with others that show love, I mean, look what he's doing for kids around here. It's really amazing. I'm so proud of this podcast and the people that come on. Again, if anyone, whether your friends or anybody, family members, feel like there is no way out, there is a way out.